from Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today, a special report on a storm that appears to be brewing behind the ivy-covered walls of black academia in the United States. This past week, an essay published in the New Republic sparked controversy among activists and academics, particularly among those on the left. Authored by noted academic and author Michael Eric Dyson, the article, entitled "The Ghost of Cornel West," is not in the form or substance of a scholarly work, but rather a political attack on a man who was perhaps the best-known American intellectual and political activist, Dr. Cornel West. Dr. Dyson's underlying complaint is the ongoing critique by Dr. West of the foreign and domestic policies of the Obama administration. The piece is available at the website newrepublic.com. Dr. Anthony Montero is one of the world's leading authorities on W.E.B. Du Bois and the black left radical tradition, and until recently was a professor at Temple University in Philadelphia before he was purged from the African-American Studies Department after being criticized as a Marxist. Dr. Montero was an early critic of then-candidate Barack Obama. We spoke with him from Philadelphia via telephone Tuesday.
You know, big question for me is why the New Republic and who is the publisher and who are the editors who would print a 10,000-word rant that in many ways is reminiscent of the Nixon White House during the days of the anti-Vietnam War protest. I think it's not just Dyson. I think this is a White House hit trying to diminish Cornel West's great influence among especially young people and to attempt to delegitimize him before the 2016 primaries and elections begin, because he has the capacity to shape the discourse and to transcend corporate media's control of the discussion. So I think Dyson is acting on behalf of the White House and the Democratic Party and maybe the Hillary Clinton campaign. Now, obviously, Dyson has some deep problems of his own. He seems to be a person who is emotionally out of control. So that's the way I see it.
So as far as it goes for the Democratic Party, whoever ends up being the candidate will have the benefit of being insulated from critique from Dr. West. I guess that's the thought. Yeah,
that's what I think. And you know, it the way it's framed is very reminiscent of the COINTELPRO type operations. The other thing is that what he is in substance attacking is dissent itself, and in particular, dissent from within the ranks of the intelligentsia. And so it has this flavor, this feel of a kind of neo-McCarthyism, kind of paralleling the Obama administration's attacks and criminalization of whistleblowers. So, you know, Dyson's rant might be just an opening salvo against any intellectual who would stand up against the policies of war and austerity and spying and anti-immigration.
Just to speculate, if you were if you were specifically Dr. West, how would you handle this? Would you respond? Would you what would you do?
I think Dr. West would be best advised to be very deliberate, not to walk into a minefield, not to react, to see what the lay of the land is, what people in social media and corporate media and other places are saying, and then at an appropriate time to clarify just what the issues are. That's the way I would go about it.
Yeah. Let's go back, you know, to context. You know, we're beginning the presidential election season. We're coming to the end of the presidency of Barack Obama. We've got Hillary Clinton as a front runner. We've got alternately Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders feeding out progressive sounding memes on Facebook and elsewhere, without anyone really believing that if they were to engage honestly to run and lose, no one doubting that they would support the most reactionary Democrat as a party favor. What role are they afraid that Dr. West will play in the campaign? And what can be done to both protect his ability to do that and perhaps enhance it and join in with it?
Well, it's not that they fear Dr. West just as a personality. They fear the mass movement, and they fear his influence with the mass movement. You know, to be very honest, I don't recall an intellectual quite having this amount of public acclaim since maybe Paul Robeson. You know, Cornel West is has a stature that's unparalleled.
He's a rock star, really.
And for the oligarchs and the war makers, you know, he presents a real problem because of his standing with young people. And his standing with young people far exceeds Hillary Clinton or any of the Republicans, and for that matter, Barack Obama himself. You know, he's become, like you say, a rock star, maybe a force of nature. And it's not something that he has sought. It has come to him because he has stood up when others have not.
Yeah, he, it's curious that he gets the microphone from time to time. He gets very powerful microphones, Bill Maher and, you know, and such. Yeah. And I'm wondering if there's a sense of opening Pandora's box when they first had him, you know, gave him this much exposure back when President Obama first ran for office, 2007.
Maybe they miscalculated. They probably didn't know who he was completely. They probably thought that he would do like Michael Dyson and others and be seduced by power and invitations to the White House. But they were wrong. They really didn't know who they were dealing with. And they didn't understand that he is driven by not just politics and ideology, but by a certain kind of moral imperative that says that to whom much is given, much is required. And so the way he is living his life now, it's kind of like his giving back for all that has come his way. His education, his position in the academy and all that type of thing. So I see him as a person on fire in a certain sense, with a sense of moral outrage at what is going on. Now, you know, Dyson, in his long rant, tries to make it appear that Cornell sees himself as a prophet. I don't read Cornell that way. Mm-hmm. What he says is he is in the black prophetic tradition, and that is not just a religious tradition. It is a tradition of speaking truth to power, and he includes in that prophetic tradition Ella Baker, W.E.B. Du Bois, certainly James Baldwin.
Right.
Now, I know Du Bois and Baldwin were, if not atheists, agnostic,
right.
But they are included within the black prophetic tradition. Cornell sees the black prophetic tradition as almost synonymous with the black radical tradition. And therefore, when he calls out Dyson or Melissa Harris Perry or Al Sharpton or any of the other of what you know, Glenn Ford calls the misleadership class, when he calls them out, he views himself operating within a certain tradition of speaking the truth, of being a witness, of standing with the poor, with the working class, and with the oppressed. So, you know, it's quite natural, and he's not the first to do it.
You know, his criticism, one of the things that shows me the lack of rigor, basically, of his mm-hmm. critique, is all over the place on both sides. He imputes yeah. motive. He imputes mm-hmm. motive to Dr. West, and he imputes motive to President Obama, as if he knows their minds. And this one paragraph, Obama welcomed West's support because he's a juggernaut of the academy and an intellectual icon among the black masses. Now, maybe that's true. Maybe what's true mm-hmm. is somebody sat with a bunch of poll information in their hands and said, okay, we have to talk to this constituency. Who can we mm-hmm. get? And there's a list,
right.
And he rated high on the list, and that's why.
Mm-hmm.
Not juggernaut, not academy, not icon, mm-hmm. or any of that crap, mm-hmm. but he's the guy we plug in for these 3,428,000 people.
That's right. And I think it was just that, I think it was that type of political calculation. And of course, Obama, and this is what Cornell is kind of saying, that after he got from Cornell what he wanted, he didn't want anything else to do with him, because I think the Obama people sensed that that West was going to hold Obama accountable for what he said he was about during the campaign. Mm. And they knew, and they felt at a certain point that was going to be a problem for them. And they felt Cornell was going to be a problem. They were going to keep him at arm's length, which I don't think he minded, to tell you the truth. Right. I don't think he wanted to be a part of the Obama court,
right.
as it were.
Yeah, I mean, given what's happened, given the policies that the Obama administration has followed, I can't imagine Dr. West administering some of those policies.
No. Not even in Cornell's most liberal days. And, you know, Michael Eric Dyson harkens back to the 1990s, the early 90s, when he claims that Cornell ceased to be an academic of any merit and became a propagandist or an activist. But you know, that's the period, if you remember, when it seems to me that Cornell West was transitioning from a type of left liberalism to an out-and-out radical public presence.
Yeah. And in that context also, that was as the Democratic Party moved rightward.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, I think Cornell's stature is not going to really be diminished by this. I think, as to a question you previously asked, I think that all right-thinking progressives, radicals, even liberals will rally around Cornell West, will look very carefully at this long essay by Dyson. Most people haven't read it, by the way, even people commenting upon it. And they're going to weigh things and measure things. And I think in the as this goes forward, people are going to see that Cornell is that intellectual among a very, 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 very few who have had the courage to use whatever social and cultural capital they have to speak on behalf of poor people, the Palestinians, the immigrants being deported, on behalf of those incarcerated, on behalf of political prisoners and those in exile like Assata Shakur and Mumia Abdul-Jamal. I mean, he has been exemplary. He is what we all want from our academics, scholars, and intellectuals, and what we too often do not see.
And then after making this other statement where he's imputing intent to President Obama, then he says, if black American scholars are like prize fighters, then West is not the greatest ever. And he goes through a list. He says Du Bois owns that title. Then it says not the most powerful ever. That's Henry Louis Gates Jr. I don't even know what that statement means.
No.
And then he says, not go ahead.
And then he lists his top 10 of the current generation, or the current and, you know, not so long ago generations, the top 10 or so of his most influential academics.
Right. He's got
and they
Asante
all turn out to be, pardon me?
And he's got Asante in there, too, by the way, which...
Oh, yes, he does, which I was... You know, well, first of all, before I go get to the Asante inclusion, you know, all of them are apolitical or apologists for... the neoliberal establishment.
William Julius Wilson, the declining role of race, you know, come on.
Yes. Who, by the way, has not written a book since 1989 that I know of.
You know what I'm saying? Maybe he did that as a favor to the movement. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. And then, you know, Malefe Asante.
Right.
You know, who is... among other things, an outspoken anti-communist who attacks the black radical tradition and who, in fact, claims or supports the whole busting of faculty unions, the busting of adjunct unions. You're looking at someone who makes a Booker T. Washington look like a flaming radical.
Right.
He is so conservative, homophobic, misogynist, and on and on and on. So to be associated with such a personality, along with this claim that you can only be an influential person in the black academy if you stay out of the rough and tumble of mass movements and politics.
As he performs his task for the Democratic Party.
No question. And the White House.
Yeah, right. Almost punctuating his own claim.
That's right. You know, but I guess I guess I should revise my statement. You can be political if it is right-wing or centrist politics, not radical politics. So it is an attack upon dissent. Again, Don,
right.
It is a part of the neo-McCarthyism that we see emerging and rising out of the neoliberal university, and Dyson is a part of it. Dyson is a major part of it.
Let's talk about that in relation to your own case and with Asante, the two different academic and political trends that represents, and and the choice that was made at Temple.
Yeah, you know, when I read Dyson's essay, it was immediately familiar to me because his attack upon West, although broader and carrying far more significance, is very similar in its geography, in its essence, to Asante's attack upon me and his justification for firing me. You know, in his words, I'm a low-level purveyor of Marxism and other anti-African ideas. And that's a quote. I'm not a scholar. I'm a propagandist. And as Asante said, I'm a communist apparatchik. Now, you know, Asante's essay could be a lens through which to read Dyson's. In the sense, and this is the claim I'm making, it is a COINTELPRO type attack, a character assassination to preempt the influence of a leading public personality. But it is also in the McCarthyite manner, an attack and a criminalization almost of dissent. And then the third thing is this claim that mass activity and advocacy on behalf of the poor, of the working class, of the racially oppressed is at odds with scholarship. And once you become an advocate, you cease to be a scholar. Well, you know, this goes back to Joe McCarthy and the Cold War. And of course, you know, it is not to be taken lightly that we have entered a neo-Cold War period,
right,
where the American empire is threatening war and carrying out, you know, low-level wars all over the world, destabilizing the Middle East, these new trade initiatives, and the home front, the domestic situation, has erupted as a result of the Black Lives Matter and the anti-police brutality and the anti-mass incarceration movements. At the same time, you get a parallel development from within the prisons, where they want to silence Mumia Abdul-Jamal. In fact, in Pennsylvania, the state legislature passed an unconstitutional law that would silence him and other vocal prisoners. And then, having failed in that, they tried to kill Mumia by medical neglect.
Right.
Now, Mumia is one of the great public intellectuals on a world scale.
Really?
He's supported by Cornel West,
right,
who's another major public intellectual globally. You know, and both are attacked in the name of they're not scholars, they're ideologues, and so on.
Yeah.
But I think the parallels between Dyson and Asante are really strong, and I did not take it as just a statement of of influence, Sante's influence. It was put there in a very calculated way. And the other side of it is Cornell has come out very strongly and vocally on my behalf.
Yes.
And I would not be surprised that if Dyson himself had not communicated with Asante in the sense of what's going on and what's Cornell doing and what's happening with Montero and, you know, and so on and so forth. And, of course, you know, Dyson never contacted me or never signed the letter of scholars from around the country calling for my reinstatement, which suggests to me that new alliances among academics who support the neoliberal turn or policies with regards to the society as a whole, but the neoliberalization of the university and this neo-McCarthyism and this new COINTELPRO type activity.
You know, for me, it's remarkable that someone that holds themselves out as a leading African-American scholar would do any kind of a discussion about President Obama without bringing up AFRICOM.
Or Libya.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But he doesn't bring up, he didn't bring up drones. Right. I don't think. Maybe he mentioned it quoting Chris Hedges. Yeah. But in terms of Dyson, he didn't mention drones. He didn't mention the fact that in his whole 2012 campaign, Obama only mentioned, according to people who keep records on this, poverty twice. Nor did he mention that Obama, that the Obama White House has gone beyond anything imaginable in the history of presidencies in this country in clamping down on dissent. And, of course, you know, Snowden and others, whistleblowers, have pointed out how controlled and you know, just the whole thing of this national security state. He doesn't mention any of that. All of these things are things that West has been talking about as reasons why he opposes the Obama presidency.
Yeah, the only mention of drones in the article, actually, is inside a quote from Dr. West, right? That says no, from Dr. West.
It's
where he says, Dyson. Dyson says, "What distinguishes West is that he assailed Obama's insufficient leftism and proclaimed it a racial betrayal, and then he calls this a declaration of a racial betrayal." He said, "I would rather have a white president fundamentally dedicated to eradicating poverty and enhancing the plight of working people than a black president tied to Wall Street and drones."
Mm-hmm.
Mm. I don't even know what race he's hitching his wagon to.
Well, you see, at this point, people in the position of a Michael Eric Dyson have literally transcended race. Mm. I mean, it's something that they can, you know, pull out when it suits their interest. But for them, they have aligned on the basis of class with the oligarchs. And, Dyson is the university professor of sociology at Georgetown University. Now, I didn't know he was a sociologist by profession, but he's the university professor there. And we, you know, we all know a little bit about the Cold War history of Georgetown University. Yeah. And its connection to the halls of power, including the White House. So so he's in the right place to do and carry out what he's doing.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.